Good problem to have.
Yeah, because we've just been wondering, like, all right, yeah, like, I don't know. It's just unavoidable, the topic, but don't know if we're oversaturating it. But I feel like there's been phases now, you know? We kind of like,
yeah,
we're talking about the beginning when it started, everything was, you know, was great, and now we're sort of in the dark turn. Now we're in the, things are...
the darkest night. And like I was saying, I think this is... this oddly perfect timing for Orin coming on.
Perfect.
Because now the authoritarian measures come into play, and you see the normies acting very surprised and all of that. And it's like, oh, this is perfect fodder here.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I mean, it's been a while since you were last on, Orin. I feel like a lot's changed since then, but I feel like... One big thing to talk about that I just want to start off with is the Tucker thing, which is just amazing. that was wild. Did you so you saw that as soon as it happened, right?
No, not at all. I don't have cable, you know, so nice. So I get onto Twitter and I see like Chris Rufo like, hey, did you know Tucker quoted you?
What?
and someone had posted the clip there. So yeah, that was pretty wild. I saw it on Twitter when someone posted it. I didn't see it live.
That's great.
You weren't sitting there eating a TV dinner in front of your TV.
Your monologue.
Everything flies onto the screen.
That was crazy. That was, yeah, I mean, I don't know if people listening know, but like, yeah, you had a really great tweet about your friend.
This is at Trustworthy Slav.
This is at Incognito, COH.
CRKBlack.com build.
This is the Fed Post.
Invading Ukraine and how it's like old empires invading Russia and all that. And and then Tucker just read it out loud. That shit is trippy, man.
And I mean, Tucker, before, he chuckled. Like, he chuckled too, like a schoolboy, which was nice for me to see.
Yeah, no, I did joke with my wife the next night. I was like, I got to watch Tucker. Who knows if I'm going to be on, you know?
It's very true. It's very true. You've made it. You've officially made it. How does it feel?
Pretty much the same, though. that was a very surreal moment, I got to say.
Yeah, that is pretty weird.
Yeah, Slav was saying too, like, it's weird, like, how we have, like, a... couple degrees of separation from that show, or like, you know, what was like the biggest cable show on TV, like very weird.
Well, now it's just
very
one strange. You know,
yeah. Yeah, right, exactly. But I know people were saying like it's going to be a matter of time before there's like, you know, shit posters on Tucker and all that type of shit.
Well, I'm follower from the first person kind of from that sphere of Twitter to make it on there. You know, you had you guys have had Bennett on, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, he got quoted on on Tucker too. So his producers are out in our sphere of Twitter for sure. It's not I'm not the first, but it nice. Was crazy. Yeah,
is it generally more NRX people that show up on there?
I don't think so. You know, I mean, Bennett, I don't think really qualifies as that either. You know, at this point, and what is that even at this point? I guess, but
sure.
But I think it's certainly people, I don't know what you want to call it, from dissident right Twitter, whatever label we want to.
When in doubt, just call it dissident right. Yeah,
sure. Yeah, that seems to be the catch all. But yeah, no, there's definitely more. I think there's definitely a lot more interest from kind of your mainstream conservative media in kind of those thoughts and what's going on. I've seen a number of accounts growing and getting attention from kind of blue checks in that, like, they're not really scared to retweet people from that sphere anymore or kind of have conversations with them. So
sure.
That's been interesting to see for sure.
I mean, Curtis was on and Curtis Yarvin, and that was he's pretty big, but that was still kind of surreal seeing him on there. But and I know Tucker had said workers of the world unite or whatever about the trucker stuff.
So it's just kinda, I mean, to be fair, it was a little
tongue in cheek.
Yeah, of course. I'm always surprised at how much of a sassy bitch Tucker is.
Yeah, dude.
Shtick.
And he wears a bow tie, bro. You can see it's kind of in that.
Yeah, he's shitposting a little. It's just, you know, people have been saying it's going to be a while before. I don't know. He says some really, really weird shit from our circle of Twitter.
Yeah, he says subscribe to the Fed Post on Patreon.
Bro, I hope so. Shit,
inevitable, really.
Yeah. This event is we know it's coming. We know.
Yeah, preordained, absolutely.
But overall, I think that's a really good sign that it's because it's like showing that this is kind of a burgeoning, you know, sect of thought right now that's kind of developing, and it's causing people who are in positions of, you know, larger influence and relative power to actually have to start looking into it and at least making, you know, concessions to it of some degree, whether it just be, you know, just some lip favors or whatever, you know.
Yeah, Con Inc. has drained the lifeblood out of the conservative movement, and they know it at this point. There's nothing left for them. That's what Trump was, obviously. Trump was a rebuke of you know, of everything they're trying to push. It was, you know, a lot of people who couldn't put that into words could put it into a vote. And that's what Trump was. And now that Trump has kind of shattered that illusion of kind of ideological unity inside the right, and really shifted a lot of people on things like trade and immigration and all kinds of stuff, you've got certainly the money is still in a lot of those mainstream organizations, a lot of those institutions, but they're ideologically dead in the water and they know it. Mm-hmm. And so the smart people are all jumping ship. The real test is going to be to see, I think, who goes where, and, you know, basically can they get enough new ideas in to just, and then just like recontain everything, you know, like get just enough in to pick things up like they always do with the Tea Party or the MAGA movement, or will we actually see a fundamental turnover in some of the more forward facing parts of the conservative movement? That's going to be the big question.
Man, well, hopefully the latter.
This is an interesting thing, because I look at like the ideological sources that like leftists pull from, and they're obviously like a lot more, they're a lot more centralized and everything. And I mean, I don't know. I'm not watching MSNBC clips really ever, because I don't want
you value sanity.
Yeah. I don't want to have a fucking aneurysm, but I don't really see them like quoting random Anons online and things like that. And it kind of seems like I've talked in the past about how like the GOP is definitely like probably like a lot more malleable. And I wonder if like that decentralization in this way of just like a lot of, I mean, I'm going to plug my nose here and say like the concept of like a thought leader or something, like a lot of thought leaders are people that are outside of big institutions on the right. And like, is that a strength? Is that a weakness? Like in this conversation, it feels like it's kind of an advantage. It feels like kind of a strength.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, how does any of that sound?
I think the answer is both. You know, it's a strength in that it feels like something is finally breaking loose for the first time on the right in a long time, mm-hmm. not just out on the edges, but near to where kind of whatever's left of power is in the right. Serious people are having conversations about restructuring. Serious people are having conversations with people who they normally would not have taken seriously, and kind of onboarding some of their ideas. I feel like most conservative commentators who know where the winds are blowing are searching for kind of this new angle to approach things with. At the same time, the decentralization, of course, like we said, it means that a lot of this stuff was on the outside. It didn't have the institutional power, didn't have the institutional money. That's why it was able to cultivate the culture that it was. I think that's what generated a lot of the new ideas and the new discussion that wouldn't have been allowed otherwise. But now we got to go through this filtration filtration process. Like said, if, you know, is this stuff going to get co-opted? Is it going to actually fundamentally change the people? You know, the, are we going to get the remove the old guard and the new guard comes in? What's going to be the result of this? Because that's going to be the real, the comfortable thing is, of course, going to be that you, you know, look at somebody like Charlie Kirk, and I don't know the heart of Charlie Kirk, but you can see his rhetoric has shifted pretty significantly over the last like 6-8 months. And so the question is, like, is a guy like Charlie Kirk going to adopt some positions further to the right and then kind of like just steer, you know, TPUSA that direction and maintain ideological capture? Or is he and everyone else going to be forced to the positions and or completely out of the picture? And, it, you know, is that going to go somewhere else? It's hard to tell at this point.
Sure.
Yeah, it's sort of it reminds me a little of the left with the DNC sort of realizing the same wall they're hitting and kind of looking for new blood. And that's sort of this Marx AOC kind of bent that they kind of pull it from.
And they have a ready-made system that they can just pull people right out of, like with the NGO complex and stuff. You know, AOC was a rising star in that, which is, I think, kind of the point here is that with some of these more like NRX or other, you know, newer neoconservative type of thinkers are a little bit less out, a little bit more outside of that framework and, you know, not within those same ties, and which I think is a, you know, obviously a beneficial thing because hopefully they're a little bit less in the weeds with all that. But like you're saying, Aaron, it does, the lack of formality and also just like experience proves to be a little bit of a, you know, a hindrance in more formal settings, like actually trying to move through bureaucratic processes or wield power.
Yeah, can you move from shitposting to creating white papers, right? Yeah. Like that's that's the big question that they've got. And do you want to, right? Like I think one of the big problems that, and this is a huge problem that the right's got to figure out, is like managerialism is the issue. Like that is ultimately the problem. The cry of trust the experts is the problem. Do you want to turn all your outside, you know, for better, for lack of a term, thought leaders into guys who draft white papers? Like, is that what you want to do? Do you want to beat these people into National Review writers, or do you want to do something else? Like, that's a real question that they've got to figure out, because like you said, the left has had had the advantage of being able to interact with its vanguard for a very long time, which means it's had a consistent turnover of new blood. It's been able to, and those people have dragged it to whatever you want to call the current position, wokeness, progressivism, further left, whatever. They've been able to do that on a consistent basis. The right has jettisoned everyone on its right for you know, that's been the job of neoconservatism, was to get rid of all of the people who had these kind of ideas, who could have brought new blood into the movement. So now they're interacting with these people, but these people have basically had to, you know, be anons or work outside the system because they weren't allowed in. They were gatekept, very aggressively. And so you can see the people desperately trying to hold on. You know, you can see some of those neocons that you've got two groups. You got the ones who made the jump to MAGA, you know, kind of and the like the Dinesh D'Souza's, and they're trying to like adopt some of the language and still like, but stay in the zone where they can fundraise off of it or whatever. And then you've got the people who do like the Bill Kristol thing or the David French thing and just go to the left because there's just no way that they're going to survive whatever that ideological transformation happens on the right. And so, like I said, it'll just, no way of knowing how this all shakes out, but it'll certainly be exciting.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. It's interesting because like, I mean, you just said there's no way of knowing how this shakes out. I am so curious to know like which way the boomer conservative, which way, which faction, you know, ends up being victorious, you know, the D'Souza's of the world or the Bill Kristol's, you know, after the last election, I think it definitely, I would have said, you know, the more left accommodating groups. But I really have to wonder, I feel like, a big check on the pulse of that is obviously going to be like the election in a couple of years. Not that that's the, you know, be all end all or whatever, but But I don't really know. And on that footing, to be honest, I don't really think that like any kind of dissident right, it has a very good position as it currently stands, because I don't really see non-neocons represented in the field all that well at this point. Mm-hmm. I mean, Trump is pretty fucking old. And I don't know, whenever I even see the guy talk anymore, I'm like, oh man, I feel like the magic's kind of gone.
Yeah, you're like, dude, just like, maybe please close your mouth for now. Someone else kind of like take that over.
Yeah, and I take no pleasure in saying this, because it's like, oh man, like, I don't want to sound like a normie bitch, but it is kind of like, it's just not, it's not like it was.
Yeah, you know? I mean, God bless him.
Yeah, everybody gets old, you know? But
yeah, I mean, I like him more than DeSantis, honestly. But yeah, he's done. I mean, I think he's. But you know, it's too early to talk about that. But sure. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's just in general, it's just funny watching, you know, this shift. I mean, I feel like it's a net good thing. I mean, with the left, from what I know of the left, at least, you know, when they're pulling the new blood and all that, there's a lot of like, you know, people jumping to be the junior partners, which is what they said themselves. You know, we can be junior partners, and this sort of like careerism there, and just sort of like shifting the guard. But it's really just a PR update. You know what I mean? So there's always that risk. You never know which way it'll turn. I think with the right, there's more potential, at least, because there's sort of like, I don't know. I think the neocons were like what you were saying. They were more of a dinosaur. They were just sort of gatekeeping better, and just sort of they're just sort of dead, you know what I mean, in a way that's different than the Democrats. They're more like adaptive, it feels like.
Because they're all former leftists. Like that's what that's the roots of neoconservatism, right? Isn't it? Neoconservatives are people who would have been the ruling elite in the left, but basically got timed out. Like the left left them behind, and so they come over to the right and they say, "Well, I can at least rule these peons," right? And you can see this. There's like a 20-year cycle of this. Every 20 years, you get a new crop of people from the left who get, you know, tossed out of the coalition. Oh, I can't believe this. I didn't leave the left. The left left me, right? This is what Ronald Reagan said. That's what Dennis Prager said. It's like, you just get this. Yeah. This is a constant cycle. They're all former liberals who, you know, things got too crazy for them, and now they're like the leaders of conservatism. That's why Cthulhu always swims left, right? Like you have this constant shift of the your right-wing leadership. I'm air quoting like you can see them. But your right wing leadership is always just former leftists. And so that's what I'm saying. This is like the first time in a long time where I've seen the former leftists kind of lose control of the of the apparatus, where like there are actual right wing ideas coming in. It's not just progressivism going the speed limit. There's some people who are actually talking like they, you know, at least talking the talk of wanting to shake up institutions and change things in a way that might be meaningful. But like I said, there's a very reliable turnover of kind of neocons in that. And so it'll be a struggle to see if they can hold that position in that cycle, or if, like I said, you actually see something different.
Defining Con Inc. and neocons as progressivism going the speed limit is beautiful to me. I love that. That is fucking hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, you look, and it gets more and more evident, because you look at the language of kind of the mainstream conservatives. Now, they're just trying to negotiate, like, at what age a child should be allowed to transition, right? Like, that's their, you know, this issue existed 5 years ago, right? Like, it just came onto the scene, and they're already basically just behind the progressives on like, what, you know, it's not even a battle over whether or how, it just we're just negotiating the, you know, the small stuff, and that's constantly the way it is. It's just they're just lagging behind the movement. They're there to kind of slow things down and make a certain percentage of the population feel comfortable with what's happening to the culture and the economy. They don't actually offer any resistance. And many of them are very pretty comfortable with that role. That's why you see, you know, your IDW types and those kind of things. They're now having very serious problems with what's happening on the right, because for once, like, they don't get to manage everything. Like there are people who are saying, no, like, actually, we're not just going to let you just, you know, we're not just going to be, you know, Bill Clinton voters. Like we actually want something different, an actual different direction, not just a slower variety of current progressivism. And that's why they're losing their minds.
They have a bright future as petty tyrants of niche subreddits. Certainly. We've been talking a little bit about, you know, Canada, and I don't want to, like, it's not like I want to, like, totally change the topic into that entirely, but kind of what you're talking about of, like, you know, conservatives are kind of like the couple of years lagging behind rear guard there. And I can't help but feel that way a little bit about any COVID restriction wins that are led by conservative parties or whatever, you know, where, you know, I'm in Washington and we're the second to last state to finally in a couple weeks lift our statewide mask mandates. Thank you, God. It's so great that they're gracing this right back to, I'm so thankful. And it's kind of one of these things of like these things that didn't at all exist, that anyone in their right mind wouldn't have even considered, like, negotiable 2 years ago. Yes. Now treated like just like the absolute cutting edge of freedom fighters.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I do get the sense that, like, yeah, like conservatives are kind of just given these kind of free, easy points for just, like, being a person standing in the room with a pulse who's vaguely in favor of taking these restrictions back. And the crazy thing is I'm convinced that overwhelmingly most people want this shit gone. It's just a lack of a forum to actually communicate that.
Mm-hmm. Which is, of course, I think the case with, like, so many issues in a broader sense as well.
Yeah, I mean, there's literally a mechanical problem happening here, right? Which is, you have a ratchet where basically these people scream at the top of their lungs in a way that just destroys people's lives for years on end, that, like, we have to have masks and you're murdering grandma and you don't want to, you know, you're just an insane terrorist if you don't wear a mask all day. And then kind of the last couple months we've had them saying, well, maybe they don't actually work and maybe they didn't really make that much of a difference. And yesterday the Atlantic ran a story saying literally it doesn't matter if masks actually work. It's more about just, like, conforming to the community's desires. And
whatever that means. Yeah.
And the amazing thing is, like you guys are saying, on the right, you have people literally who are just like, you know, like, we're like, no, this is insane. Like, someone has to pay for this. And they're like, no, just don't throw away this win, guys. We're winning. Look, like, they're rolling back their night. They're finally seeing the light. They're finally seeing really. No, you idiot. Like, people died. Like, people died because they couldn't get cancer treatment. People watched their loved ones die on Skype because they couldn't be in the room with them because of these absolute, in, like, maniacally evil people. You cannot just walk away and be like, well, we won that one because they saw that. No, like, if you do not make someone pay for having this kind of horrible imposition, this kind of evil act on society, they will just do it again in 6 months when it's convenient for them. Mm-hmm.
After midterms.
Yeah, exactly. But this is the ratchet, right? Like, they just scream until you're so tired. You're just like, fine, I'll do whatever you want. Just shut up. And they finally do. And then you've already gone, you know, 10 miles to the left or whatever. And then they just start again and you never actually travel back. You're always heading steadily that direction. Maybe it intensifies. Maybe it slows down, but always one direction, always the same direction, because these people are relying on the fact that you're just not, you don't want it as much as they do. They're just not willing to make them pay a cost for what they're doing. And they're willing to make you pay every cost if you don't comply with what they're doing.
Yeah, you give them an inch, they take a mile until there's, like, literally no mileage left at all, until there's, like, about to be a breaking point. And they're like, oh, let's cool it down a little bit. Let's walk it back, like, 6 feet, you know, give you some breathing space. And then they're like, hey, can we get that inch again, though?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's two steps back and one step forward. It's like when they lifted the mask mandates last summer, like, you know, and temporarily like left it, you know, it's the slippery slope thing that Warren always talks about. It's that it's like, you know, I mean, it's the frog in the pot. I mean, if they just did everything at once, it wouldn't work. People would react. People would freak out a little more. You know, it's why they said 2 weeks to flatten the curve, because if they did everything, if they told you it was going to last 2 years, people would freak the fuck out. So like, yeah, that's what they have to do. They have to do the slight adjustments back and forth. And that's, yeah, this is really why I have a certain view of the GOP as like the rear guard of the COVID thing, the way I view the DNC as like the rear guard for the war on terror that they claim to be anti-war after, like, you know, basically endorsing all of it. And somehow they got the mantle as being anti-war or whatever. I don't know. All that is very suspicious to me, but
it's just it's funny to me, dude. Just like the like celebrating these little like table scrap wins. It's like hey man, like,
yeah,
this is a big win. We got the guy who's fucking your wife to wear a condom. That's like a big win right now,
exactly,
dude. Like, don't be taking black pills, dude. Come on, you got to celebrate this.
That shit annoys me, man. Because that's the thing. Whenever I like you bring that up, people, that's the first thing they say is that you're being a doomer. And it's like, I don't know, Warren. What do you make of that that argument that you know, that we're doomers or whatever type of thing?
Well, obviously, like you know, the NRX crew is pretty famously gets this like all the time, right? Like, how could you know, say this? Why are you always so bleak in this stuff? And the answer is really simple. It's like, if you don't understand how stacked the odds are against you, you'll always fall for the same trap over and over again. Like, I get it, it's bleak at moments, but like, do you really want to just keep staring at the same thing telling you, oh yeah, no, you're only one election away from just turning the ship around, and it just so happens that the last 80 years that never quite happened, but really it just one, just, you know, another 2 years just trapped in the cycle forever? Is that really a better way to see the world than to just understand, like, there is a set of systems, there's a set of mechanisms that is locking you into these results, and if you just keep approaching the issue the same way, you will keep getting what you're getting? Like, does that mean that your problem is much harder than you think it is? Yes, but if you do not understand how long you have been losing, you are certainly never going to be in a position to win. And I just don't have a lot of time for people who are trying to lie about that. Like, you just really, I had one more go around in this, I'm not doing it. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. It takes like seeing how bleak it is to see like that in itself is the imperative for the fact that we need to change the way that we're operating. Like, how bleak our outlook is like in itself proof that we need to change the way that we're approaching what we're doing.
Yeah. And you see this, like I said, a little bit with some people finally on the right is instead of just saying like, oh, well, you know, the Democrats just aren't playing by the rules. And oh, can you believe if a Republican had did that? You know, like, I'm finally seeing people be like, no, you have to gut the FBI. Like, you have to gut these institutions. If you don't completely disband them, you have to fire everyone. Like, you have to use like stem to stern, and you have to completely rebuild these institutions from the ground up. And even that might not be enough, but at least it's a better understanding of what the problem is. Like, the problem is institutional. It's down to the core. Yep. It's systemic. Yep. It is not a matter of rearranging some people at the top, some functionaries who are still going to be trained in the exact same thing and manage in the exact same style and produce the exact same results. And just because they have an R next to their name is not going to change anything. Like, until you fundamentally get what has to happen in order for those things to change, then nothing's going anywhere. And the fact that at least a few people, again, I don't know where that's going to go, but at least a few people who have, I think, a serious chance of having some kind of voice are saying that, you know, is at least a positive change, you know.
Absolutely. 100%. It's definitely, you know, especially like what we're talking about before of these institutional people sort of like being bloodless and sort of having their feelers out, desperate for like new blood and new takes and all that. Like, it's a good sign. All that is a good sign, because it shows there's cracks. And I mean, as long as people just don't think like, oh yeah, you know, this midterm will solve everything, you know, as anything to get away from that is a positive step in my mind.
Yeah, the people who are just like, oh man, oh, just wait till the Dims see that that crackback with oh my god, you've learned nothing.
How many times, how many decades do we hear this same shit like over and over? It's amazing. But yeah, it's like what Slav was saying, like, you know, people just celebrating, like, hey, I get to not wear a mask. It's like, bro, your whole life you never had to do that. Yeah. Why are you celebrating that? That is it's stupid. Like, that's just cucked.
It's like definitely, I think it's the most egregious example of what we're talking about that I've seen in my life. None of this stuff existed 2 years ago. You know, I mean, it's not really worthy of celebration to get out of a situation like that.
Yeah. It's like they didn't even just move the goalposts. Like they just changed the playing field to like a shittier field.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. This is the vibe I get from some like NormieCon people who are just like, oh, well, you know, things are fine in my neck of the woods, or like, oh, well, some of the businesses came back or whatever. Like, oh, I don't have to do this crazy shit anymore. It's like, bro, like that's not a victory. That's not something to like, I don't know. I just can't view it that way. I can't view it as something to like boast about or take any like W in. I just can't. It's like,
yeah, I mean,
you're basically taking a W for like not getting fucked like twice as deep or whatever. Like, I don't understand that at all. But yeah,
there's no W there, but there is like at least a sigh of relief just for the fact that like it's no longer directly affecting your life in such a negative way on a day to day, minute to minute basis.
Yeah. I mean, like I'm stoked that I'm not going to have to wear a mask indoors anymore.
I mean, shit, dude, I still fucking do where I live.
Really?
It's bullshit. Really? Yeah. They have a citywide one, even though the state's down.
Well,
really?
And that's
because you're more red than we are.
Yeah, I know.
You're in a more red area.
That's the fucking thing that bugs me out, bro.
Well, that's kind of one of the big things is that like this and the vax requiring proof of vaccination when like going into establishments will also no longer be mandated. But like I doubt that I'm going to be able to go down to Seattle and, you know, sit down and have a dinner anytime soon, because I'm sure most of these people are still going to fucking require this shit.
No, I think that that's how it's going to be in like red states, where like blue cities had to act against the state in order to put these things in place. I think those things will stay in place for a long time. But I think that like in blue states where they acted like kind of in lockstep with the state, I think that you'll see them maybe change that when the state says, oh, actually, we can change it. They're like, it's going to be like a trust the experts type of thing, but just in reverse there. Because at least that's what I've been seeing from people that I know that still live in Denver, because they did that about 3 weeks ago. And they've been, except for very large events, like maybe like an NBA game or something, most places have taken their vaccine requirements away.
Interesting.
So I think like in the state where it's like, oh, we're having to like stand up against this fascist red, you know, COVID having, you know, leprosy bunch of conservatives. We need to keep our laws up because we actually know what's right because we listen to the experts. So like if that's the case, it's going to be almost like a counterforce that's going to keep those measures in place way longer than like if they were just kind of already going with the state in the first place. And then they just say, oh, you can take that down now. They'll be like, oh, OK, cool. So that's good. I think at least that's how I see it.
Yeah, it's going to kind of be your new sanctuary city, right? It's like a way to virtue signal against the,
yes,
you know, and I think they're already doing that. Virginia, right? Like Virginia got rid of its mask mandate, but like multiple counties are requiring it. I don't know. I haven't had any of that in over a year, so I've been lucky. But yeah, it is insane to me that that is still something that's still being enforced, and that you're right that people are going to, blue areas are going to wear that like a badge of honor, especially if they're in a red state, showing how virtuous they are, and not being like the chuds who are just, you know, abandoning science.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I'm experiencing right now. It's fucking frustrating.
Giving your kid mental illness to own the conservatives.
I mean, that's literally the liberal project.
Yes. Thank you.
It that way. That's not even a joke.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, when we look at it that way, I mean, like masks are like far from the first direction.
That's like the straw that broke the camel's back, maybe.
Does your kid still have their genitals? Well, they're doing pretty well.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks like you haven't sterilized your child, so we're going to need to take them away from you. And
I mean, you joke, but that's literally happening. That's not even that's a real thing courts are doing. That's a new frontier of the child custody battle is, oh, well, you're not vaccinated or you aren't affirming your child's gender. Well, that's abuse. We're going to put them with the other parent. And so the parent that is more in line with the current regime ideology is going to be the one that retains child custody. So that's a real thing that is being forced through on the edges of the court system right now.
Oh yeah, I already know it. I mean, that's basically one of my whether or not I move is one of the biggest considerations with just like having kids at some point in the next couple of years is like I really don't know how comfortable I'm going to be in this state because I think most of those stories that I read. Seattle Children's Hospital, I think, was central to a lot of them. And so, you know, it's definitely a thing that I'm pretty anxious about with the future. It's something that's I'm definitely considering. But I don't know. No easy answers, to be totally honest, because the one thing that I worry about, too, is just moving to another area, you know, putting roots down and then just having that rot follow me.
Yes.
All you're buying is time.
Yes.
Which if your kids are involved is worth it. But that's all you're buying is time.
Right.
Right. Yeah. I want to talk about that the concept of blue flight, you know, because I see Oren talk about that a lot. And that's like an interesting thing I want to talk about. But, you know, especially because me and Slav might be perps with that in due time. But yeah, I mean, especially like with the kids, like, yeah, like all these pics of them having like the kids masked up and like social distance and like all the politicians and everybody around them or the adults are like not masked. Like, yeah, it's just it's a very, you know, simple black and white visual. You know, there's not much to servers, you know, the same thing when the servers are masked and they're not and celebs aren't. It's the same dynamic, really.
Yeah, I mean, I saw a fucking picture of some New York City council woman like reading at a kindergarten and all the kids are sitting there on the floor wearing masks and she's just wearing no mask, doesn't even have one in sight. Like, you know, that just a fucked up picture, right?
I'm
there.
Sure
something's wrong with that.
Yeah, I'm sure they would say in the lib mind, in the deranged lib mind, they're like, oh, well, the kids are more vulnerable or whatever the fuck. But
which is just wrong.
Like, yeah, I mean, it's whatever. I mean,
flat
whatever
out false.
That. Yeah. But let's talk about the Canada thing. I mean, hopefully this won't sound too dated in like
Canada.
In a week or whatever. But yeah, I mean, obviously the latest thing that's been going on is they're freezing bank accounts and they're dropping the hammer and they're sort of giving what it looks like to me is like a Jan 6, a post Jan 6 treatment, sort of like, you know, the feds just monitoring and you know, applying the repercussions for their act a little bit more intense, obviously, because the truckers were, you know, attacking more vital arteries than what Jan 6 did. So, yeah, that's basically where we're at right now. I haven't been following too close. So I don't know if there's anything else going on, but I see the news is basically saying it's done, like they're dead. Basically, it's over. But I don't know. What do you make of all this so far, Oren?
It's pretty wild. I think that it's well, January 6th was off, obviously, an interesting example. I think the Canadian one is far more widespread. You had a much larger participation. And like you said, they had a much more fundamental way at which they could kind of impact the people in power and do so in a very optically neutral way. Like they didn't need to storm a Capitol. They didn't need to scare anyone. They didn't need to have a you know, congresswoman, you know, pretend like she was attacked. Can be in the street honking. They can block a bridge by just parking somewhere. No, there doesn't need to be any violence. There doesn't need to be any fire. There doesn't need to be any, you know, blood. Like it's just a shutdown of what they do, and what they do is essential. And it's a real problem, obviously, for the country. And you can tell from the way Trudeau acted, right? Like, I don't think anyone, even myself, as cynical and blackpill as I am, I did not see things escalating like that, right? Like Trudeau flipped a switch, and we went from telling peaceful protesters to go home and the normal, you know, false flag, these people are racist, sexist, homophobic, whatever, to we're seizing your bank accounts. We're going to run horses into the crowd and trample people. We're going to arrest you, even though you're peacefully protesting and that's within your rights in the charter. And there's no violence and nothing else. Like, we don't care. We're just going to change the law on a dime or not bother to change it, whatever. Like, rule of law is done. Your enemy. We're going to crush you. And so I think it was pretty stark. I think for most liberals, they could tell themselves the narrative of like January 6th was the coup, you know, and like these people were endangering the sacred halls of democracy. It's pretty hard to do that with the truckers, right? Like they're right. The like I said, the optics are fundamentally different. The tack they were taking was different. And the way that the regime kind of snapped on them in a moment was a pretty stark contrast that it if you were not aware of how quickly things can turn, then you learn that lesson in real time.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't. I think I was kind of disturbed by me not being that shocked by what happened. I don't know. It seemed very like clinical. It just seemed like, of course, they would do that. Why wouldn't they? I mean, I don't know. It kind of maybe it begs the question of like, is this an example of like the limitations of nonviolence? Which, you know, we don't have to talk about that because that's like, I'm just going to leave that there. We don't have to talk about that because that's a Fed post or whatever. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think it was effective in that there were a lot of mandates rolled back and, you know, it obviously had some spread to other parts of the world. I mean, there's already been vax passport protests around the world. I mean, it's clearly like a bigger, broader thing. And this was just a very tactical, it's a lot more tactical than anything from like summer 2020 or Jan 6. It's clearly like a lot more effective. So, I mean, I don't know. I had measured, I think in the last couple episodes we've done of this, I think we were trying to have like measured expectations.
Hello?
And I think it's pretty,
you guys still there?
Net positive, pretty like relatively successful.
Hello?
That's how I still feel about it. I don't think you could really imagine this kind of lasting forever or really like getting a concise win, you know? But that's how I felt about it. But yeah, I mean, obviously it's insane and we shouldn't be too desensitized to what they did. I mean, it's fucking insane, obviously. And yeah, it's just in general, like COH had mentioned this before of how they keep downplaying it as like very fringe and not really serious. And then they take these measures that are clearly relatively extreme. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the horse trampling, I mean, yeah, maybe it's just a one-off thing, whatever, but I mean, look, I mean, it's just crazy in general. I mean, it's just, you know, it's the whole reaction was pretty, pretty insane. Did Oren leave?
Yeah, it looks like Oren just, fell out.
Can he?
Hello?
Can you hear me? Oren, hey.
Hey, he's back.
Hey. Yeah, I think my VPN cut me out.
Oh, okay.
Oh, no problem.
I think that was Trudeau flipping a switch on you there.
Yeah, yeah, he knew. Got me.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just saying in general that I think it was a net positive thing. I thought there were a lot of gains and a lot of positive influence on the rest of the world, part of a broader thing as like broader resistance to what's going on. And yeah, I mean, obviously the measures are extreme. They're to be expected. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. Slav, did you see the horse trampling thing?
I did see the horse trampling thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't really know what to say. I see that what there were the hundreds of arrests. I don't really know what to make of it. I think like if everybody actually was cleared out, then they would report that everyone was actually cleared out. If everybody wasn't actually cleared out, they would report that everyone was cleared out. So I don't really like know totally what to make of it. I haven't really been like following any like independent accounts all that much. So I don't really know for sure. I'll say the ugly kind of morbid thing, which is just like as far as optics go, right? Like, trample people with horses, you know what I mean? Like that's a great spectacle to make, make the Canadian government look right. Horrible. Though right. Obviously I don't want to cheer on it like some fucking old lady with a walker getting trampled on by a fucking horse. To be honest, I don't really like have like a super strong opinion on it. I mean, like, To be totally honest, like, it reminds me of the South Park bit of just like Canada's not even a fucking real country. Like, it always seemed like, I don't know, Trudeau has always kind of seemed like a particularly like sterile CEO to me, yeah, or something. Yeah. And so it seems pretty fitting for him to just immediately escalate to this. And I don't know. I mean, it seemed they just. Maybe I'm wrong here, but the impression I also get from Canadians is like they just have like different values than we do. I wouldn't say that it's like to the extent of like Australia, you know, like you wouldn't have Americans just totally disarm themselves and let anything like what's happening in Australia happen. But like, I don't know, I guess kind of like that Australia diet soda is Canada a little bit. I really don't know what to say. I hope it's not over. If I was a betting man, if you put a gun to my head, I would probably say there's still probably plenty of people there. Mm-hmm. I just saw a thing today when I was like, when I hopped into Twitter briefly to get the link for the Zencaster. And I don't know. I mean, there's shit still happening in other cities in Canada. And, you know, there's the worldwide stuff. I mean, they arrested an absolute fucking shitload of people in France. And so, I mean, who knows? But again, I mean, you know, there's only so much power that, you know, symbolic gestures can really exert. So, I mean, I don't know. Call me when like all those people in other countries are like shutting down, you know, supply chain. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, think.
No, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I think the lessons learned from Canada, like whatever, I don't think the material like gains or like whatever will be the biggest thing. Like they're going to release things like we were talking about for 6 months. They'll let things cool down. They'll calm the ratchet down, right, and say it was unrelated. And then as soon as they think they can start, you know, moving the other direction, they will. But I think the value of the lessons that came out of Canada are for just kind of the narrative collapses of Western liberal democracy. The pretending like rule of law is a thing. pretending like they're like some kind of objective and neutral government is a thing, that human rights are a thing, that the free market is a thing. Like, you just watch each one of those dominoes collapse in Canada, right? Like, you have the right to protest. No, you don't. If you have the wrong politics, if it's not a state sanctioned protest, you don't have the right, even peacefully, even in a way that in no way, shape or form causes any kind of violence. It doesn't matter. They'll drop the hammer on you, and they'll not just drop the hammer on you. They'll go after your family. They'll go after you after the fact. They'll hunt you down. You have a free market? No, you don't. The banks will happily freeze your money. They'll seize your money. They'll seize the money of your relatives at a moment's notice if the government asks them to. The idea that you operate in that kind of society is ridiculous. Marketplace of ideas. That's a nice marketplace of ideas you have there. If you try to share any of those ideas in the incorrect fashion, in any kind of effective way, you'll be immediately jailed and lose control of your finances. Everyone got to learn about Carl Schmitt in a very real way in Canada. Like, if you are friend, then you will be held up. You will be respected. You're on our side. If you are enemy, anything and everything is justified in crushing you. Those are the politics that are in play. That's what's operating. That's what always was operating in the background. And now you're just seeing it really stark relief.
Yeah, what I'm seeing, you know, leftists say, well, it's best for leftists to probably just ignore this. But yeah, I mean, they seem to be saying that, well, if you, you know, were interfering with supply chains and all this stuff, then you're committing terrorism. That's what warrants this level of response. And it sort of goes into this question, I guess, where it's sort of like, but I guess that's what it takes in my mind is like, that's not really a slight against it. It's like, I'm always in favor of things need extreme responses because what's happening to us is extreme. So I'm definitely in favor of but that's the tricky part, the balance thing of like this unrest. You know, we have all these good things to say about it, and it's very optics neutral, like we're saying. But I guess that's one of the consequences is as you get closer to being more disruptive and actually forcing their hand, then they have justification for what they're doing in their mind. But I think that's what it takes. I think that's absolutely what it takes.
Labor organizing is terrorism now. Labor organizing is now grounds for indefinitely detaining people and torturing them for the rest of their fucking lives.
That's not labor organizing. That's small business owner, small producer organizing. That's right. Right.
The petty bourgeois is out in the right. streets. You know.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. There's something specific to truckers that makes it particularly fascistic, guys.
It is amazing how all non-progressive opposition to the government just happens to be at the behest of the rich, no matter how poor the people doing it are. They just happen to be small business owners at the end of the day. They're all kulaks. Mm-hmm. And to be fair, like, that's what these people really hate, right? At the end of the day, like, kulaks are always the most dangerous people to those actually in power, because they're the ones that are actually in a position to possibly usurp them at some point. Mm-hmm. That's why you wipe out the kulaks. You don't need to wipe out the peasants. The peasants don't threaten you. They don't own anything. They don't have anything that they don't have power bases. They don't have connections. They don't have establishment.
You need the peasants for labor force. You know, you need the peasants to exploit, to try to scrunch any type of value out of them that you can. And you can't really do that with the kulaks, who, you know, have their own means of production, at least to some degree.
Yeah, I mean, I take it as a temperature check in general that, because there was a lot of left criticism of like, oh, this isn't really real. This is a, LARP, or this is just a temper tantrum. They always say that.
Just a bunch of dumb truckers scared of a freaking needle. They want to eat their horse paste. Okay.
Yeah. You either take the route, I guess, if you were like a regular lib, you're going to take the route that this is very serious and they're terrorists, or you're going to take, if you're like posturing dissident leftist, you're going to say that this is not real unrest. They're just, it's not real. But I mean, I think that's why, again, not to, like you said, not to be morbid or whatever, but the fact that they did this is a good thing in a way of that it shows, it's a temperature check of like, this was a legitimate thing that threatened them. Why else would they take this sort of response? It shows you that you're in the right direction. You're hitting the pressure points.
Well, and you saw the same thing with like Southwest in the US, right? Like you had this wildcat strike. And where was the left? Where were the Marxists? Where were these people talking about a labor action that actually stopped a corporation from requiring a fundamentally invasive decision onto its workers? Not a word. Sorry. Like not one word of support and in general, actual opposition and contempt for these people. So.
Yep. Yep. Exactly. And yeah, I mean, I guess, the sort of, this is more of a, I guess a semantics thing that's going on now, but basically classifying what's going on in Canada, the response in general, is that there's some people that are describing it as fascism, right? I mean, obviously what's funny is them saying that the truckers are fascist and none of this shit that the Canadian government is doing is, that's all, above board. That's not, obviously that's the most obvious funny thing on its face.
Yeah, but, like suspending the rule of law and just kind of doing your own
the
thing.
The collusion of banks with the state to punish people who are, the truckers are the fascists, not the state and the banks working together to crush them, yeah.
Right. I mean, aside from the obvious funny thing about that, is this really classifiable as fascism, which may, because I'm wary of that. I'm wary of calling things communist. I'm wary of calling things either of those things, because I feel like those are just dead scarecrows.
Yeah, none of that shit means anything anymore.
Yeah, it doesn't really mean shit anymore anyways in general. But like, I don't know. I feel like I've seen people on the right or like conservatives that are saying like, oh, this is fascism, or like the Holocaust comparison or whatever. I feel like, this is an easy thing for leftists to just be like, oh, you're making the Hitler comparison. You're a moron or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like it's an easy grab. I don't know if Musk said that or somebody said that, but yeah, I mean, I don't see it as fascism. I really don't. I don't see it as communism. I don't even really see it as liberalism, which I want to ask you about if this is really like liberalism in general. To me, it's just like they got marching orders from Big Pharma and the World Economic Forum and these other, nefarious like space people, reptiles, that this is what has to be done. And that's really the whole thing. I can't, it's hard for me to ascribe that to fascism or communism, or even liberalism, honestly.
I think it's some, I think it's something new when it comes to the when it comes to the fascist thing, because from everything I understand, like when people talk about corporatism and everything, like this cooperation between private interests and the state, like that was corporatism in the way it was then, was just so reliant on the conditions of the time, and anything now just like it's kind of a faulty comparison. I don't know. Sorry. I mean, I want to hear Oren's take on it, but I think it has more to do with just the fact that fascism is a meme that people want to use against each other at any chance.
Right. Right.
So I think the best place you can go for this is James Burnham and the Managero Revolution. And the reason is that Burnham points to the fact that all of the states in the world are transitioning away from kind of bourgeoisie capitalism and into what he calls managerialism. And he identifies basically the three ideologies of the time, communism, fascism, and liberalism, because he's writing this in like the mid-30s or early 40s. And he identifies them all as managerial regimes. And so they're all flavors of managerialism. And I think this is why you have this like constant weird, like the right's like, that's communism, and the left is like, that's fascism. And actually it's all just managerialism. Like, right. and you're getting different types of managerialism. And so everybody identifies the flavor they're used to, and they see the other version and they're like, oh, it's that one. Every time their government does it. But what you're really seeing is rule by experts, rule by the mass state, rule by managerial elites. And it's ruled by social engineers and people who want to fundamentally manipulate and control the way people think, the way people act, the economy, the businesses, the state. They want to control everything top down through centralization because it increases the power of their managerial class, and it also allows mass control, and you can generate amazing things with that number of people you can bring under a kind of a managerial regime. And so I think there's why there's this constant confusion. Well, this thing is kind of fascist, this is kind of communist. Like, no, you're just looking at different flavors of managerialism, and every time you see the flavor not used to, you're calling it out. But the fundamental problem, whether it's the communists attempting to own all of the means of production through the state, or whether it's it's the state colluding with the corporations, or whether it's it's the educational and university apparatus and media apparatus influencing both the state and corporation. Like, the point is, in every one of these situations, it's essential to break down barriers, break down differences, so that you can homogenize the preferences and understandings and cultures and folkways of the population, so that you can mass produce products and governance and education for all these people. And what that does is allow you to control larger groups of people, larger groups of areas, that allows you to sell more products, that allows you to wield larger armies. It allows you to do all of these things simultaneously. Do you do it through a more communist system? Do you do it through liberalism? Do you do it through fascism? At the end of the day, everyone's trying to do the same thing: homogenize their population so they can better control a mass amount of people simultaneously.
Yeah, it's like what you're saying. Yeah, it's technocracies. And maybe this is a meaningless semantic discussion in general, but like, yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's just weird seeing people talk about it this way, just kind of muddying things, it seems like. And I mean, yeah, I mean, it just doesn't seem like liberalism to me, because I mean, liberalism's like about free speech and shit like that. Like, what does this have to do with liberalism, really? Or even free markets, like you said, like, you know, even the idea of like, oh, this is pure capitalism or whatever. Like, this isn't really like, it's not a free market, obviously. It's not really like a classic understanding of like pure capitalism. So it's, yeah, I don't know. Maybe it is worth discussing. I don't know. I feel like the way people talk about this is very confused.
I mean, I think that the IDW critique, right, would be like that these people aren't, you know, are like doing a disservice to the liberal tradition and everything. And like, yeah, like they are like illiberal, I guess, like the managerial class, like has a lot of tastes that are going against that. But I think it's always like important to just like keep in mind that this is kind of like the dialectic like evolution of liberalism, and it came from the those same premises. And I think it's just time has passed. You know, it has changed over time. I don't know. I'm interested to hear Oren's take on that.
I think it is the end state of liberalism. Like, I think this is what liberalism ultimately and inevitably produces, because liberalism is simply the obfuscation of the friend-enemy distinction. It's pretending, the whole promise of liberalism is that we can, you know, we can kind of put the big issues to the side. We can shove all that stuff in the closet. We can find kind of a minimum, you know, acceptable ethical framework, which allows us to coexist together. Larger amounts of people can trade and live under the same government without coming to these like existential fundamental collisions of values. That's the promise of liberalism. And it's just a lie. Like, sorry, but like those collisions are still happening. All they're doing is convincing part of the population to surrender those things, saying, oh, well, we're not actually threatening your way of life. We're not actually threatening your values. So you don't actually need to come into any kind of conflict with the ruling class. That's what liberalism does. And so once they have like basically smoothed over and they've removed all those competing social spheres and institutions that would have challenged their power, they're simply they're taking their victory lap. Like they don't need to justify their power anymore. They don't need to give you this long speech about human rights. They control the definition of human rights and they can change it on a dime. If you haven't noticed, the narrative coming out of Canada has been freedom is a problem. I put a thread on Twitter of like all the insane, you know, Canadian newspapers and media outlets, multiple U.S. media outlets talking about how freedom is a far right word. It's the alt right word. Washington Post literally wrote an article about how the term freedom is like synonymous with white identity, and like the notion of freedom is wrapped up in the history of whiteness. Like these people are, you know, they will just change the language whenever they need to. It doesn't matter if this concept has been central to liberalism in its entire life. They don't need it anymore. They discard it because they're in charge. And that at the end of the day, power doesn't need to justify itself to anyone, or at least they right. think that's the case. And that's how they're acting.
Yeah, that is a common leftist attack of just being like, oh, more freedom. You know, it's just like only a moron would care about that, which is, you know, I'm sure it's very, very popular pitch in general, just to take that angle. But I mean, I think what you guys are saying, yeah, it makes sense to me. I mean, I think there's even an argument in the capitalist sense of like, or free markets, you know, what's the logical endpoint? Maybe it's not true to like the origins of capitalism and free markets, but the logical endpoint is if you, you know, are accruing more than other your competition, is to buy out your competition or to capture, government, basically to box out everybody else. I mean, it's just a logical endpoint. But I would say like the way we classically define these things isn't really applicable anymore. It's definitely worth thinking about for sure. We hit the 2 hours. We should end around now. I don't know if you guys had anything else for Oren, but just in general, I mean, I don't know. Look, I'm speaking this from the outside, but it seems like there's a lot of like rightward energy that's kind of like coming up, maybe because we're under Democrats, maybe because the COVID stuff is really, you know, kind of overextended their hand to some extent. I don't know. I feel like there's some resurgence of religiosity compared to like what it was like, you know, a couple years ago. It was like pretty much like almost dead, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I don't know if you feel that way about it, Oren, or if you feel any optimism about any of that of those trends.
I think the advantage of the right is that the controlled opposition storyline for the right is just dead. In a way that the progressives have won for so long, the left has won for so long, that theirs is, while it still looks stupid for people from the outside, it's still intact, right? Because they're winning. And most people would rather function inside a winning system than break away and try something different while their side is winning. So your left radicals are going to be contained because they're at the very least they're closer to victory than the other side. The right is dead. They're dead as a doornail. The mainstream right, and they know it. There's nowhere for them to go, and so the only place for them to go is to the outside margins and talk to those people and see if they've got anything new to try. And so, due to the desperation of our situation, there is ironically then some hope because mm-hmm. They have to talk to people they wouldn't normally talk to. They don't have any other choice.
Well, I look forward to the Fed Post Party leading the right 10 years from now.
Let's fucking go, bro.
As the filthy Trotskyists that certain people That's right. online like to call us.
We'll get you guys all on Tucker. You can explain your why you left the left. We'll work that out.
Can I talk about some Hotep, some white Hotep ideology on there?
Of course. Hey, listen, Oren, I didn't leave the left. In a lot of ways, the left left me. Okay,
that is an amazing insight. Can I get you? Can I book you at a couple TPOSA appearances?
100%. Book me right after Kyle Rittenhouse and his trap music introduction.
You get a trap music intro too.
Right before that ex porn star and that new trans person too they got over there.
Yeah. Exactly. I'm blocked from a number of very mainstream people for pointing that out. But anyway,
well, you're probably doing something right then.
Let's hope.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Hopefully, we'll see you on Tucker. Within the year or so, I feel like that might happen. And just give us a shout out, give us a nod.
Absolutely. Yeah. To my boys in the Fed Post,
subscribe.
Never forget the ones that got you there.
Absolutely.
But yeah, this is great, man. It's perfect timing for everything that's going on. And we're all fans of your account, obviously. Mm-hmm.
Definitely glad to have you.
Yeah, this is great. The last one was great. This is great. So much appreciate, man.
Yeah, it's always awesome talking to you guys. Always a good time.
All right, that was part one of our episode. If you'd like to listen to part two, you can find that at patreon.com/fedpost. Thanks for listening.